Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Colin.
And I'm Jonas Hill over Brad's Pit.
This is Hold Up. This is the show where we talk about movies from long ago and not so long ago and see if they hold up.
Billy, this is Chad Bradford. He's a relief pitcher. He's one of the most undervalued players in baseball. His defect is he throws funny. Nobody in the big leagues cares about him because he looks funny. This guy could be just the best pitcher in our bullpen, but one of the most effective relief pitchers in all of baseball. This guy should cost $3 million a year. We can get him for $237,000.
If you lose the last game of the season, nobody gives a shit.
We're all told at some point in time that we can no longer play the children's game. We just don't know when that's going to be. Some of us are told at 18, and some of us are told at 40. But we're all told. Consider this me telling you the theme song is coming. Cue that.
Cue the theme song.
What the fuck are you talking about, man?
What?
Welcome to Oakland, DJ.
What else can I help you with?
Get on base, we win. You don't, we lose.
I can't leave here with that.
It's an unfair game. This is not a discussion.
Talking la 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 like this is business as usual.
All right. You know, sometimes you gotta take a chance. You gotta step up to the plate and take a big swing. And use lots of sports analogies when you're doing a sports-based movie called Moneyball. Moneyball from 2011. Kind of hard to believe we waited so long to do this one since it's been ripe for a couple of years now. But do what we will. This, folks, is a big episode because it is the 300th in the Hold Up catalog.
Woo!
And it's also the last.
Woo.
This is the last Hold Up episode. Woo! Now, that's not necessarily a celebratory thing, except that we can tell you that we're just moving on with the format and the platform, and we're going to shift it over to something video-based to hit on YouTube. And 99.9% sure that this new venture is going to be called The Treatment. And before we get into this Moneyball episode too far, we just wanted to fill you in to tell you that this has been an absolute blast, and we can't wait to carry on with something that, while we will provide you with some details later on, we're going to have more of an interactive approach to things. So for all of you who used to sit back and yell at your headphones or yell at your radio while we were talking because you agreed with us or you disagreed with us or we missed something important, you're going to have a chance to participate in a review of movies with us to let us know when you think we're on the money and when you think we're full of shit. So that's going to be tons and tons of fun. So keep an eye for that. We're going to post here in the next month or so onto the channel, within a month anyway, of details of how you can join us to get that done. And we're looking forward to seeing and hearing all of you at that time. So, on with the 300th episode of Moneyball.
It's the first episode of Moneyball.
I guess that's right.
It's true.
Although it'd be really easy to understand why the podcast had failed if it was the 300th episode.
We're trying again to get it right.
Yeah. We're going to get it this
time.
We
just can't get it right. And it's failed many times. No. So Moneyball, I had super high hopes for coming into, I got to say about that. Directed by Bennett Miller, who has done such films as Capote and Foxcatcher. I've never seen Foxcatcher. I actually wanted to ask if either of you guys had seen Foxcatcher with
I have seen
what's
I have.
His name?
Yeah. Steve Carell. And,
yeah, I've seen it. It's okay.
I remember it being fine. I thought it was, I'll go as far as to say, good.
Yeah, Carell plays a real monster, which is outside of his comfort zone, but he's really good at playing a creepy monster. Really?
Yeah, and I heard Channing Tatum is really good in it, too.
Yeah, I remember it being okay.
He is good. It's really sad.
Yeah, that's why I don't watch it more, because it's kind of a depressing movie. I've never wanted to go back and watch it again like a lot of those other depressing movies we talk about.
Yeah, it doesn't have the staying power.
Yeah, we
Moneyball's watch. Also... pretty important because Aaron Sorkin did the screenplay.
Well, co-wrote it. It was co.
Yeah, co-wrote it with Steve Azalian. Based on a book called Moneyball, The Art of Winning an Unfair Game. And this movie is based on the New York Yankees 2002 season. And it's a really, really interesting story. I can see why they turned this into a movie, because there are a lot of fairy tale elements of this Oakland A's season that like stand out in real life. After watching this movie, I ended up going and watching some of the YouTube clips of the A's season from this time, and it was really, really interesting. Also interesting is the cast, because it's pretty huge to get Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Robin Wright, Chris Pratt. We got my fucking crazy boy in here too. Spike Jones. Yeah. And some other faces you would no doubt recognize in this flick. But mostly a lot of unknown guys playing the athletes on the A's team, other than Chris Pratt is kind of the biggest one doing that. And this guy named Stephen Bishop, who played David Justice, who was a minor league ball player who looked so much like David Justice, they nicknamed him David Justice. So I thought that was a pretty funny little cue to go on. Slightly concerning as we walked into this was the runtime at 133 minutes, so just slightly over 2 hours. And it was made for around $50 million and brought in just over double that in the box office, but I think it just had some staying power. This is a very, very highly regarded movie. If you look for scores on various websites, it's going to be way up there with big scores. And did this win any Oscars?
It was nominated. I don't know if they won. Jonah was nominated and Brad was nominated. I'm sure the director and the screenplay was nominated too.
I didn't think this won.
Nominated
but no winners.
Six Academy Award nominations for Best Picture, Best Actor, Supporting Actor, Screenplay, Sound Mixing, and Film Editing.
Yeah, but all of those it should have won for, or at least those are all good awards for this movie. Editing, the editing of this movie is excellent.
It's
great.
This would have been his second big flick. It's an interesting place to start, I suppose. But I really like the look and feel and flow of this movie. I don't know, like having seen this movie like maybe 5 or 6 times at least over the past years, maybe even more. I don't know. This one's kind of been a constant go-to. It's like, for me, this is one of those movies where when it came on, I would kind of just sit and start watching wherever it is, because like I said earlier, it just has these elements of a weird fairy tale season without the team necessarily winning the whole thing. Like that they start so crazy, that they take a new approach, that basically Billy's mission is to try and deconstruct the game of baseball and make it into something else, which you can't turn it over to a bunch of bean counters.
Yeah.
So it's just so interesting. And like I said, I had high hopes for this coming in. I think both of you guys kind of feel the same about this flick, that it's,
yeah,
it's in your regular lineup.
I've lost track of how many times. Sometimes I'll watch it halfway through and fall asleep or go to bed and then pick it up a week later, but it's kind of always, it would be the movie that if I was like a crazy rapper and I had video playing the same movie over and over again, it wouldn't be Scarface. It would just be Moneyball. Every room I'm in, it would be like Moneyball would be fine. It's one of, I don't know how much Sorkin wrote and Zalin wrote, but I'm pretty sure that a lot of the dialogue is Sorkin's, and it's a pleasure to watch. It's so easy to enjoy. Yeah, it's strange. Brent, how about you?
I don't know. I've seen this a pile. I mean, this has like been one of my go-tos for a while, but I feel like you probably showed me. Like, I hadn't seen it, assuming that it was a movie about baseball, and then being convinced to check it out. And then I fell in love with this movie.
Yeah.
It's not hard. I mean, there's good, engaging, and charming characters who are flawed, but you end up, you know who you're rooting for in this movie the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's like both our main guys. You're rooting for the A's.
It's a buddy flick. It's interesting that it's a buddy flick, but it's a bunch of different things. But definitely,
well, it's kind of also a father son. Like, buddy, it's kind of father-son, because definitely Brad Pitt is the mentor to Jonah Hill. I mean, he gets Jonah Hill, or what's his name in this movie? He's based on a real character, Peter Brand. Yeah, based on Paul De Podesta is the real guy. But yeah, he goes from being an analyst to an assistant GM, so it's like an opportunity he can't refuse, and Billy Bean is his mentor coming up. This, you know, what's really interesting about this movie is Aaron Sorkin also wrote Molly's Game, which took the game of poker and made it watchable by a wide audience, because they didn't dumb down the poker, but they give you enough explanation and graphics on screen at the right times to explain what's happening so that you don't get lost in it. And I think this movie does similar things with baseball, where even if you weren't a baseball fan, you would probably enjoy watching this movie, because baseball is the backdrop and there's some baseball in it, but this isn't like a other kind of sports fanatic movies where it follows like the guys in the ice and in the locker room as tightly as Any Given Sunday kind of focuses on the football in that way. And other baseball movies, like even Major League or I don't know, it's just not that much about the baseball. It's about the idea of baseball, not necessarily all the Oakland A's team itself. So I don't know, I think he does a really great job of making this as an approachable topic to everyone.
Yeah. No, he breaks it up, and it's because, like you say, it's not about baseball as a whole. You don't need to understand strategy or the positions as much as you need to understand that he's moving a guy into first that doesn't play first, and that's not conventionally done, but they're doing it because they have this new innovative technique and they're going to do that. So like, they walk you through the strategy really well. I fucking love the way they do that, actually, because I don't like baseball. Like I said before, I hadn't watched this movie originally because I didn't really care for that topic.
Yeah.
But this movie's not about that. And it's interesting you guys talk about the buddy or the dad dynamic. I'm not sure which side of that argument I fall on, but I think it maybe both at some time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think there's a father-son, I mean, at least an elder or someone who's sage. And this other person's like new to this in business. Like, they're, you know, they've had their, Jonah Hill's character, his feet have been wet, but he hasn't really been involved on the level that Brad Pitt brings him into, which is like a general manager level. He was a player analyst, so he has a lot to learn about what he's supposed to be doing in his new job. He doesn't really know what that is. So I think there's a great mentee. Story that's going on. It's also just about, we talked about this in the movie, we've talked about it in other venues about it, but it's about how it's everybody's against them and they're trying to do something so substantial, which is change a game that's over 100 years old, in the way that people look at that game. And it's a big, bold thing they're trying to do. And they're getting no help from anybody. Now, that's a device of the movie and not reality, because as we've all read in trivia, that the coach actually of the team was supportive of Billy's plan.
And, it's always made me feel really bad.
Yeah, yeah. You know what they could have done? After our conversations about that, I thought about that long and hard, and maybe they should have just changed the name of the coach. Because he is a real person, and if they would have just changed his name, then the real guy wouldn't be associated with this character. But they kept the name the same. I personally think
it's
got to
go past that. The position is as personal as his name.
But you're fictionalizing it anyway, so just make a fictional character. I know
but like, to it just like this guy supporting it and this movie being about, you know, against all odds or whatever, and then it just like it, I feel like that discredits the real person. And I'm not saying that I think as a movie that it doesn't work. It's a great conflict to have in the movie, and it makes sense that that guy is the guy. But maybe that's a problem that they're supposed to problem solve, right? Like, maybe that's a thing. Maybe that's a bit of a spot where Sorkin let himself get out a little easy.
It would have been really hard for me, having read the script, though, to like tell them to rewrite that, because structurally, when they're having that back and forth with him, or Billy is having that back and forth with him, he's never listening, and they keep losing. He's never listening. They have like at least three arguments about it. And then Billy starts unloading all of the players that the coach likes to use that he's not so see. That is such a structural linchpin to the story, because as soon as that happens, they start winning. So like, you would have to, it would have killed me to have torn that out. But
I don't disagree. Like, it's very effective for the movie, but because it's a real story, it gets tricky. You're like, if they're real people.
Well, I know. The guy who was the coach was very upset about it.
Well, yeah, even more. Like, because he's part of that story. Like, you're telling that story. Like, I find it to be like a, I mean, it's a dick move from Sorkin to do that, I feel like.
And it might not have been Sorkin. I mean, once again, that could have been Zaylin. We don't know who wrote what.
Okay, fine.
Zaylin or Sorkin, yeah.
The Zaylin Sorkin consortium can be blamed.
It's a twofer, unison. I guess. Because Sorkin could have changed it if he came in and did a rewrite. So I guess, yeah, they're both at fault.
Yeah, they just did that poor dude dirty.
They didn't
consult him, from what I heard, right? The Art Howe, they did consult Billy Bean, and apparently Bean and Howe had kind of a turbulent relationship, so maybe this was like from Billy Bean's recollection or perspective of it, that Howe wasn't supporting things, so maybe they thought they were kind of doing it in the right way. But yeah, it's a hard one, knowing that fact when I watch this movie now. Is it's not as easy, because that would totally feel like shit to put your heart and soul into something, and then people are like, oh, you're the naysayer, the bad guy.
It's because true.
He is the villain through some half of the movie.
There's some of my favorite scenes, though.
I know, yeah. Because it's Philip Seymour Hoffman, too, who plays it really well.
But I think you guys are right. I mean, if I was that guy, and I was a part of this team and a part of the history of it, and everyone was, because nobody like us, we did look into it, but for the majority of people who watch this movie, they're not going to look into it. Yeah. So he will be painted in this light forever. Like, it did rewrite history, and not in a good way for him. So yeah, I get that. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes.
I mean, another thing that was not true to life was Billy Bean being portrayed as this kind of loner, sad guy who was like all career focused, because he in real life had remarried, I believe, by this point. And they actually did shoot for this movie scenes with a lady who's on one of those crime scene shows, like Bones or something like that, but I can't remember her name. Anyway, they shot some scenes with her, but they cut them because it was just better for this movie to play him as like obsessed about this, and he didn't need a partner, right? Even if it was kind of real life.
I didn't realize they'd actually shot some of those scenes, but I've read Moneyball online. I read it all the time. I go back and look at scenes and how they did things. And there's the his girlfriend or wife, I don't know how the screenplay portrayed her, is in a lot of it. So I always thought they cut her out before shooting. I didn't realize they had actually shot stuff.
Yeah,
it's the right call to cut her out. And again, like
good
the
editing,
omission
yeah,
of a
great
person,
totally
right. Good call.
Yep. Yeah,
that's the biggest problem with movies today, and this movie did it right. Is they edited it well? They edited things out like that were a diversion or that was wandering or it was a waste of our time, and it strengthened his character by being a loner and having only Jonah Hill to kind of be his support. It strengthens the story. So yeah, like, good editing. I hope this won for best
editing. Yeah.
Because I don't know anything that's edited well these days. Edited well for time, edited well for story, edited well for structure.
No one in movies. Apparently needs to edit for time anymore.
No, just go. Go for it.
Three and a half hour movie and pretend like that is a fucking good idea.
In 2024, too, which is the attention spans continue to shrink and the movies continue to get longer, in some cases they make money, but these movies will not be rewatched, be good movies a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, people will go back.
No one wants to like sit down with their favorite 4 hour movie every fucking weekend. Do you know what I mean?
No.
You need to fucking lose a life to fucking do that.
One of the rare ones that I think we said ended up holding up was Dances with Wolves.
Yes.
Even though we all said the start and some of the end could have been cut, the longest part of the movie is that middle, like, almost 3 hour bit where he's with in the tribe, and it's fucking so money, all of it. It's Moneyball. That's like one of the rare ones, but even it for that reason, even editing. Though I love that movie, it's not a watch every year even for me. It's like every 5 years or more, because like, who has fucking time for that?
Seriously. Yeah, another one is really well done, and I don't know how long it is, but I know it's over 2 hours, is Shawshank Redemption. Yes. Pulp Fiction, another very long movie that
Godfather 2. They're not really long. They're 2.5.
Godfather 2, right? Not for me anymore. I think I said that one didn't hold up. But Godfather, yeah. And then the other one that's really good, that's long, is Boogie Nights. Boogie Nights is shockingly great still.
Boogie Nights is solid. I will not...
And long, but good. But a good long movie.
Say hi to your mom for me, okay?
Say hello to your mother for me.
I didn't know Brad Pitt was a producer on this.
Oh, yeah.
Kicking it forward. Mr. Pitt, smart guy. Looks and brains and money, apparently.
Also, yeah, Jim and money, Jonah Hill and him.
You don't have to, apparently.
Jonah Hill and him played pranks on each other. Jonah got lambasted every day. There's pranks going on the set.
Brad Pitt's supposed to be a major pranker, so everyone that goes on set with him ends up getting pulled into them. Him and Clooney, apparently, both, but I think everyone that's around them.
He had his golf cart decorated, and it made noises and stuff when he drove it, and it had it like ridiculously decorated. All sorts of things, but yeah, it would be fun to work on this set. I really liked how we got to know some of the baseball players and stuff. We got just enough of to know them, the David Justices, the Chris Pratts,
Hattieburg.
Some of the pitchers, like even the pitcher that gets dropped down to the minors.
Yeah.
We got to see just enough of him that I felt real bad when Brad Pitt had to tell him. He's like, I can only dress whatever 25 people, and he's like, I understand or whatever. And then I just like they did a really good job of giving you. Even the daughter, same thing. The daughter is not in this that much.
No, it's very, very limited. She's the only one. Effective. She's like the only like person that's on this side.
Two scenes and a phone call.
Yeah,
plane boarding scene.
A bunch of plane boarding. And then the wife and the boyfriend, played by Spike Jonze.
Yeah.
I hate them.
Crazy.
And one phone call.
They're in one scene, and you hate them. They are such douchebag fucking L.A. motherfuckers.
I don't hate them.
I don't like them.
Spike Jonze, I find to be, he's meek and he's maybe not totally sincere.
It's foreign words.
He doesn't know. He wants to be supportive, but he's like, oh, you lost Giambo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's the cell phone stuff, too. I mean, that's bad enough.
And his wife calls to say, you know, we're real proud of you. You've done good and shit.
Yeah, you know what? That's fair. Okay, his
I don't
wife
hate
then.
Them at all. They're
okay,
not,
well,
they're
I'm not a
nice.
Fan of Spike Jonze's character, but I'm not supposed to be. I guess hate yeah. is a strong word. They once again, by them not knowing the names of the teams, and they're just like, yeah, yeah, that's too bad or whatever. Yeah, it once again makes him so alone, so unsupported. And once again, doesn't make them bad people, but it does make them like not, he's not connected to them in that way. It is the island, the guy on the island, all on his own.
Yeah, well, except for it's him and what's his face.
Well, but then he gets somebody to like, to work with him that they believe in the same thing passionately. So it's a great bond. It's a great bond between them and a great friendship. And Jonah Hill does a really good job in this of never straying outside of his character. Even the other day when I watched Steve Jobs, Seth Rogen cannot help being Seth Rogen. He couldn't do it. He's still doing a little bit of the little Seth Rogen. Like, Seth Rogen never disappears into a character. But I feel like it was a good performance in Steve Jobs, but I just feel like Jonah does disappear into this Peter Brand. He does in Wolf of Wall Street in his character as well. With the teeth and the
that character is fucking hilarious.
Yeah so I think
Jonah Hill almost makes that movie. Jesus, mm-hmm.
He's
that he is a much better actor than all of that group that he hangs with.
Yeah. He's got some like legit chops. He's like, he plays this one so well because he's very meek. Yeah. And he comes out of his shell when he kind of has to, but it's never in a, it never feels out of sorts. You feel like he's finding himself as he goes. Like when he has to let Pena go, and he follows Billy's advice, but the way he handles it is all good. And when they agree to buy the backup relief pitcher and make the deal so that Billy can like get the profits on selling him the next year, and he does like the yeah kind of thing on the phone. Like it's all like, so it's really good. It's really good. They played off each other so well in this. It's always a pleasure. Like, I really like when you sink into characters like this.
And the chemistry is great for sure.
Yeah.
The other person who kind of disappears in his character is Chris Pratt. I don't see Chris Pratt in Scott Hatterberg. He's also a more meek.
Yeah, no, I do see Scott Hatterberg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I almost forget he's in this movie every time I watch it because it's Pratt, not a huge.
It's Pratt's, because when you look at his IMDb fucking picture, you.
Yeah, I was looking
at it
too.
Fucking all of his feet, like it's super bright.
But I feel like he's not the only other movie I've seen him in where he kind of disappears in his character. Are it doesn't seem like himself is Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, he's another minor.
That's why I feel like I'd love to use him for a project of mine, because I think he could do it. I just think he needs the right script and the right director. He's got a lot better acting chops than he shows in his Jurassic Park Guardian of the Galaxy bullshit. even though I love the first Guardian of the Galaxy. But
no, I think Chris Pratt's great, and he's great at a lot of stuff. Guardians of the Galaxy, he's got that old TV show people love him on, and I've seen clips and he seems good.
Oh, he's great on Parks and Rec, but
yeah,
but it's more of a goofy, you know, it's a more of a bit of a goofy moron. Or he's very lovable, but yeah, some of these other roles like I'm talking about are a little bit more serious. He can play serious. He can do it.
He can definitely do it.
He can do the comedy too, but I want to see more of him in serious shit.
Both ways,
like that World War One that he was in that I didn't see, 42 or something like that, or was no?
There's an alien one Adam he did Driver. For Prime. That's a giant piece of shit that you should. Never
yeah,
watch.
That alien one, and Adam Driver did a similar. Type
Don't
thing,
do that. Don't watch it.
No, I'm not gonna.
Nobody should watch that. And then I really love the devices they use in this movie. The structure of this movie is so sound. The way that they do the streak, all in those montages and stuff. And then it gets up to that boiling point where it just stops. They're like, win 19. They're going for 20. They're going for 20. And it's just like, boom. And then it cuts to the car and he's driving. And then the call comes in and they're so proud of him. And he turns on the radio. That whole sequence and then him going back to the stadium and then them starting to lose. Could you imagine, like, how fucking devastated you would be? He was on his way out of town, and then he went back 11-0. He gets there, and it's a tie game, bottom of the ninth.
Well, that, like, makes all the previous stuff that Billy does, where he doesn't watch the games and he, like, listens and then he turns it off, and he does stuff like that throughout the whole movie. Which I wonder how true all of that is, because it definitely makes it seem like. It's the superstition, right, coming out, which is rife in sports, especially in baseball.
And I think I heard that that was true to some extent somewhere. That was a device, but it was also true.
But that makes it all the more interesting. And it also makes the Hatterberg home run all the more interesting. And like, you would think that that is something that they made up to make the movie more exciting. But that shit that happened. They were up 11-0. They dropped the lead. And then Hatterberg hit a walk-off home run to win it and take the record at the time. Like, that's amazing. Crazy.
That would have been one of the best games in baseball history to have been at.
To be at? Yeah.
22 hits, 22 runs.
At home.
And then they win it. And then they, like, take it. Yeah.
That'd be cool. You catch the ball. And you're like,
oh, that would be a huge
ball.
Huge.
And then I sell
it. Then you sell it because you have no affiliation or love for the team. You're just like, money. Right. I caught money.
That's what I'd think. I'd catch that ball. I'd be like, holy fuck, I just caught like a $10,000 bill.
That does bring up something interesting, though, because that ends up kind of being the climax of the movie.
Yes.
Because that's the best thing that happens for the team. And that is an amazing thing that happens.
It's the biggest thing, yeah.
There's still like 20 minutes at least after that. And Billy says, like, if we don't win the last game of the season, then, like, they will dismiss us. And that's exactly what ends up happening. And then as this movie kind of winds down, I don't know, we talked about this a bit when it was going on. The ending of this movie kind of makes me sad because... like, Billy's not only offered a massive salary by a hugely reputable team in the Red Sox, but that Boston then wins a World Series using his system
2 years later.
So they say 2 years later. So Billy could have changed baseball in that way by getting on board, but he doesn't.
He does.
And I mean, I guess, but it wasn't him that ends up. I don't know. Like, no one's crediting him, I don't think.
They're
crediting the Red Sox GMs. But
the Red Sox GM said, like, you were the first one, and you're the one who's going to get beat up for it because you're the first one through the door. And, like, we're going to take what you did, and we're going to win.
Yeah, but Billy doesn't win.
No, it doesn't matter, though. Billy changed the game.
Billy only never wins. The fucking movie goes out to his daughter singing, "You're such a loser, Dad."
Yeah.
"You're such a loser, Dad."
I know, but...
It's a really weird choice for
Yes, it was.
He doesn't win the game, but he got what he wanted, which was to change the game forever. If it was not for him, the game would not have changed. Boston would
that
have never
true.
Taken...
He does say that.
He does it. That's all he wanted. That's what I don't find it sad when he... That's what Jonah Hill's telling him when he's showing him the home run with the guy who, like, fumbles on the first base. He's just like, he didn't know he hit a home run. Like, to me, it is a happy ending. I've never sad for Billy.
I understand. And like, yes, he does end up changing the game, but, like...
That's all he wanted.
That's just like someone taking a patent for something and then just being a better salesman and selling it and making millions off it and being successful.
The other thing,
too, the person who originally invented it gets shit, right? Like, no one's crediting Billy, I don't think. Because I didn't know who the fuck he was until this movie.
But they're making movies about him because he did change the game. And also... Bill James, the guy who created this, is the actual one that Billy stole, not stole, but it was inspired by Bill James. And the Red Sox hired Bill James also to work for their team. So it would have been Billy as the general manager, and Bill James would have been, I don't know what he would have been in the front.
But then it was also, Like, but then it was more Peter Brand or Paul de Podesta's idea with the facts of it. Like, Brad Pitt just wanted to do something different. He was the enabler. So it still wasn't even his system.
No,
it
but was he's two the other one people.
You need someone to, like that Simon Sinek thing where it's like you need someone. The first guy is the guy that everyone looks at as crazy. And the real leader is the first guy to adopt
the
crazy behavior.
Yeah, you need the champion.
So in that sense, I mean, that's not even Brad Pitt still. That's Jonah. But
like he's the first to take the
just
chance
a little,
on it.
Well, yeah, he's the first one that
he
has
the
power
to do it. He stakes his career on it. So, when I mean, trying, I respect it.
When you're trying to do something big, in something like whether it's sports or entertainment or music, And you have something you believe in, you always need someone to champion it. Like, you need a champion who's like, yeah, I believe in the shit you're selling, and I'm going to help you, and we're going to do this together. That's another reason why I like this movie, is because it's about a champion, someone who champions an unpopular idea, an unpopular thing, because he's sick of losing. He's sick of the money disparity. He's just... He can't go another season the way he'd been going. The regular baseball bullshit he always talks about in the movie. The good looks and the tall guy, the good girlfriend. Good body. It's so funny, all that stuff. It's also, yeah, both times are changing. And nobody wanted to get on board because everyone was, you know, had a good job. And it was going to make them irrelevant.
Yeah. I guess, like, the way I look at it is that Billy did the thing and he's the first. Yes, you're all right about that. But then he still could have taken the job. He could have taken the big salary and he could have a World Series and the same thing.
Changed the game and made a shitload of money.
And won a championship.
I know, but it's the line in the movie and they're pretty plain about it. He didn't go to college and he could have played football or he could have done something else, but they offered him a bunch of money and he turned.
We get it.
I know, man.
But like,
we get it, man.
It's explained. Like, money is not everything.
We know that. We're just saying that's a bummer.
It's a bummer.
We would have
liked
to see him get it. We understand the character.
I disagree, though. I don't think it's a bummer. I think the message of the movie is if he would have went and got the money and all the glory and like he wouldn't have put family first or his personal life first, that would have been the bummer. You know,
I don't see where the sacrifice is here.
There's an assumption that his family sacrifices, which I'd never see otherwise.
His daughter says, "Well, you have to move away if you lose your job in Oakland?" And he's just like, "That's not going to happen. I'm not going to move away. I'm not going to move. We're going to see each other all the time." It's like right in the movie. I'm surprised as a father of a daughter, you're not more connected.
She's already flying to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so but it's different flying from LA to Oakland or flying from Los Angeles to Boston.
Yeah. But
a few hours.
Yeah. You can use your $12.5 million salary to get her.
See her at Christmas or whatever, but she's got to go to school. She can't fly for whatever hours, probably every weekend. It wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't be convenient.
It just doesn't seem like the as big a he was choosing between the money, but with that money comes unhappiness. Like, that's not always the case. It just was in his case. And so I get why he doesn't want to make a decision for money. But he also would have got to be the GM for the Boston Red Sox, which is pretty fucking massive. And he would have won a world championship. That's why.
Well, you know
what?
That's not true, though. You guys are making an assumption. So Bill James and someone else became the general manager of that team. And those Bill James and that guy won the World Series. If Billy would have come in, many different things could have happened. Different decisions could have been made. And Billy may not have won. We don't know that. It would have been a different management.
So. You're right. But definitely it's never going to happen in Oakland, so.
Yeah.
You guys.
And did not happen in Oakland. That's all. I'm not saying it's wrong or it's
Colin's
the wrong
like
thing.
You guys,
I just,
Colin will make a whole world of assumption as to why his family's going to collapse if he takes another job. But all of a sudden, the what if of the fucking scenario is enough for him to flip the script.
No, I just like I just what like
if he
this?
Left and Oakland won the World Series? Then what? What does that mean? Yeah. Think about that.
What if he farted and the breeze blew a butterfly's wing off in Japan?
I'm just saying
just
that's
bums
a pretty
me out a little bit. That's
a
all.
Pretty big assumption to make that if he would have taken the job, that everything would have gone exactly the way it went.
I mean, the assumption is there because they all use the same system, and the movie is talking about the system being the thing, not the person. It's not about Billy Bean. It's about the system that Billy Bean was brave enough to adopt.
Yeah.
So if these guys are just using the same thing, then John and I are looking at it saying, all things equal, which is what I think we're supposed to assume in a math-based fucking system, that Billy Bean would have won there.
He could have won it the first year instead of the second. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, he might have just jacked it right in. So
maybe he would have won every year since then. And everyone's like, how does he do it?
Well, it's interesting also that, like, pretty much there is no advantage anymore because every baseball team does this.
Yeah.
They definitely would
say,
be
Colin, I'm surprised that you support it. His decision to, like, he got burned once by making a decision for money. He goes on tilt. He's still on tilt. And you support that decision? You got to play the same game.
I know, but the thing is that Billy Bean...
You don't let tilt change your judgment.
We're also thinking of it...
I'm all in. I'm a 60-40.
We're also looking at it from a perspective of... we're also looking at a perspective of people who are not millionaires. Yeah, we're not millionaires.
Yeah.
So, like, a guy who's, like, a millionaire is making millions of dollars a year, didn't make... an extra $10 million.
No,
like,
he was
so
making like a couple hundred thousand, I think.
No, we looked it up. He was making $1 million a season, and then he's moved up in the organization, and he's worth like $30 million or $40 million. So like yeah, sure, he could be worth $100 million now, but like you know, like what the fuck? He's a millionaire anyway. Like, I'd be a little bummed, I guess, but you know. I got 40 million to keep me warm.
Could be worse. You could be the guy that bought Bitcoin, bought pizza with like a fucking $30 million of Bitcoin or whatever it was.
What?
The first guy to ever use Bitcoin bought it pizza with it. And the amount of Bitcoin he used to buy a pizza would now be valued at like 30 or 300 million or some stupid amount of money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, definitely stupid amount.
I hope
of money.
That was a good pizza. I hope that had some fucking white truffle on it and shit.
Probably not. It was probably like pizza 249 with the fucking wing deal with the feathers still in the wings.
Yeah. Well, Billy Bean is still like a minority owner of the A's.
Yeah.
And
he's an owner now.
I don't think he GMs anymore, does he?
Nope. He moved down.
And so now the team's going to be moving to Las Vegas.
Yes. So now he gets to live in Vegas. In 5 years. I mean, that's his award.
Yeah. William Lamar Bean III is his full name. No wonder they call him Billy.
Lamar.
William Lamar.
It's a good thing they kept that out of the movie because Brad Pitt is not Lamar.
No, he's not. Really,
and he's not of the third anything in this. The music in this movie is also very good.
Amazing.
Just to say, it's like, it's perfect for the movie.
Great composed music, yeah. I love it. I listen to it all the time on the side.
Yeah, it's good. It's good shit. His battle with Grady is and the scouts is really interesting as well. It's a great little conflict all the way through this movie. Like Colin said earlier, everyone's against him. Just his daughter and Billy and Peter are the only three going for this. And even the owner of the team is like, what else can I do for you today, Billy, besides give you any more money?
Yeah.
I wonder
but does
about
it
this.
Hold up?
I wonder about this. Yeah, and I do want to get to that in a sec, but I've also started watching the Drive to Survive, the new season of the F1 show, which I just absolutely love because in F1, there's like the top three or four teams. And then there's like the second tier of teams, and then there's the third tier of teams. And I'm always like, what's the motivation of tier three? They just want to get a couple of points. They want to like not be the 10th or 11th team. They want to be the 9th. And if they do that, it's a big success. And that's so interesting to me that they and like the Oakland A's And the way that Billy describes, he's like, there's rich teams and there's poor teams. Then there's 50 meters of shit.
Then there's us. Yeah.
And they're in it, right? And all the owner seems to want is like a good effort out of it. It's just a very interesting...
it's a business. It doesn't need to win to be profitable.
I guess,
it's like if you're a golfer, right? You're like, if you're the ninth best golfer in the world, you're doing fucking great in life.
Yeah. I guess there are guys who golf like that who like don't... They're like, I'm never going to win. I'm just here. I'm happy to be here.
The other thing about the dialogue and the performances in this movie too is the dialogue for Brad Pitt is very simple. He doesn't give a lot of speeches. There's a couple of times where he does. Yeah. But like just the way he says things, like for a perfect example, when he goes in and they're dancing and partying and they lost, and he's like, and it's just like once again, it's very simple. He's just like, "What are you doing?" Yeah, he's dancing. Yeah, he's like, and then he's like, "That's what sounds like." That performance of like those simple lines. He is such a good actor to take what was so little on the page and like make it such a big thing. It's very hard to do what he does in this movie. Jonah Hill also the same.
You may not look like a winning team,
but you are.
But you are one. So. Go out and win it today.
Play like one today.
Play like one today. Yeah, like he delivers. It's just, like to deliver that like he does is not easy. A lot of people fuck that
this
up.
This is one of my favorite Brad Pitt performances, for sure.
Yeah, he's stellar. He just fits this really well, like former player, current coach, athletic guy, smart. I love his, like he's hanging up on people on the phone, like you get the answer that you want and hang up and spitting out his popcorn. All the scenes where he's negotiating for players. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, his charisma
carries. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. His passion comes through for it.
But is it enough for you to want to squeeze this movie into your delicious eye holes another time?
Delicious. Delicious.
I was thinking about watching it after he got off
the podcast. So Colin,
why don't you call it then?
Yeah, I mean, this is in some ways, for a 2-hour and 13-minute movie, it's pretty perfect. I mean, like the structure, the writing, the characters, the acting, the music is fucking fantastic. The way that it gets me interested in something, like when you can take something as mundane and as boring to me as baseball, someone who never watches baseball. I never watch baseball stats. Yeah, I could give a shit about baseball stats. And you make me interested in a 2-hour and 13-minute movie that has tons of baseball in it. That's fucking magic. I want that magic. So, it holds up. Give me that magic.
Nice. I also think it holds up. It's just such an excellent movie. All of it. Even if I'm sad at the end for my own reasons, even if the climax happens and then there's still a bit more to go, it's just such a downer when they lose in the playoffs. The conflict, everything about it is just like so interesting to watch. And I don't hate baseball, but I don't necessarily watch it. I can watch like a bit at a time. And I do love statistics, right? So it should be right up my alley, but baseball is just not. This movie just is able to take it and make it into something bigger than itself. And it doesn't rely on the egos of the characters like other sports movies, like and like putting you in the locker room with the players and following them so closely. Like they're just, it's another perspective on sport that I think is overlooked. And I would love to see a football movie that did it something like this. Any sport, right? If you're taking it from this perspective, which is like it's there, it's the backdrop, it's the point, but it's not the main focus. That'd be really great because Any Given Sunday is not the football movie like that people make it out to be.
I always wanted to see Bull Durham again. We could do Bull Durham for The Treatment, maybe. I always wanted to see if that movie was good.
I think that's a similar one. Like in the way it handles it, because there is baseball in it, but I think because
is that Costner.
Yeah, yeah, Costner
Susan
and
Sarandon and Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins plays the young rookie.
Oh yeah, he bangs his wife, right? Yeah.
But it's about a catcher who's like, he's only being brought back to handle this young pitcher who's up and coming. He's going to be a major leaguer, but he's got a 10-cent head or whatever they call it. And Kevin Costner's like on his way out.
And Susan Sarandon likes to bang the young studs.
One player per year.
And she ends up banging both of them. Like,
But I think it puts the baseball in a different light than most sports movies. You don't care about the stats and the other stuff. You just kind of are happy to see what's happening. And
the story and stuff. And
I don't know,
players.
Maybe it's a piece of shit. I haven't seen
it. But again, like you say, like it's generally not the game that we're watching. It's the game should be the setting, right?
Yeah, it's the relationships. And
the zombies are the setting, right? Like if it's going to be something like that, then that should be the backdrop, the world that we're in, the... You know, the network, but it's not the meat.
Yeah.
The meat's got to be, it's got to have more to it, more balls, more content, more sincerity, right?
More balls, more bats, more gloves. Let's
go. Brent, does it, so Brent, it's your turn. Does it hold up?
Let me tell you the following.
Go.
From now on, when I'm trying not to come and I think about baseball, that will make me think of Moneyball, and then I will come. So this movie does hold up, but it has ruined one of my
go-to
hold ups. Yeah. And
that's fair.
And now it's just naked grandma and you know, botulism.
You're going to have to get golf in there, I guess, now.
Got to get golf in there. I mean, love Tim Cup, though. That's going to...
Any ball.
Fuck, we should do Tin Cup. But...
The treatment.
Yeah, no, of course. This movie holds up. I love this movie. It's a go-to. We never picked it because there was a doubt.
Yeah.
I think we just wanted to talk about it as... we've had a lot of not hold ups lately, and it's getting harder and harder to find movies that do. Hopefully, when we start doing the new show with the new movies, we can highlight some things that I'd really like to discuss about the state of new cinema and why it's good and why it's bad and all of that stuff. But
I'm looking forward to like, but now that we're gonna do some like co-reviews with our audience, at least get some live feedback while we're having our discussions and have some things to play off. I'm hoping that maybe our audience will be able to explain why they like certain things that we do. I think that's
totally
gonna be so interesting, and I want to see those perspectives, like Barbie, and like, it's just not for me. So like, let's every time I have a problem or an issue, like, let's have someone reinforce that point for us. Just like, that's
I
not
had
for
a,
you, man. You're not supposed to like that.
Yeah, I had a lively debate about David Fincher with my girlfriend and her two friends who all liked, David Lynch, who all liked David Lynch and his movies. Yeah. And it was a lively, spirited debate.
Yeah.
But I'm going to force them all to sit down and watch a movie with me of David Lynch's movie, because I don't think they've watched them recently, and they're all just like, but it's so, like, you know, weird, and I'm like, yeah, well, let's watch one.
It's also shit.
Sit down and enjoy it, and we'll see how long it takes for you guys to see, and maybe what I see, because I don't think it's going to be very long. I want to do Lost Highway, maybe,
because
I think that one's a real piece of shit. But anyway, I digress.
Why don't you tell us how you really feel?
Yeah, Bill Pullman.
Yep.
Oh, shit. And
his best
Game
role
over,
since Daryl
man.
Zero.
Game over. No, that's Bill Paxton.
Again.
Yeah.
Fuck, I keep getting them mixed up.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, wow, this is kind of sad, but no one's crying. So the last episode of Hold
I'll
Up.
Cry.
At least we did a badass, awesome movie that will continue to hold up over the ages. And I hope we get more movies like this in the future. Just interesting, well-told story. You go, Aaron Sorkin. You do your rewrites and make this movie into the stratosphere.
Yeah, a lot of
that's
people
what
fucking hate his dialogue, though, you know?
Yeah, well,
for his zippy bullshit.
I'm probably not going to hang out with those people.
I've heard him talk about it a lot, and he...
be sure to not have that opinion.
He came up with his style based on listening, when he was a kid, listening to opera. His parents would take him to listen to opera, and there's a way that it flows and sounds and moves, and that's how he tries to write his dialogue, is he wants it to sing. It should be pleasant sounding. He used certain words because it sounds that way, and I've never quite been able to capture that myself, but I still try and steal what I can, pay homage to it. Ever? I mean, I love listening to opera, but I've never been to an opera.
Sounds like you're missing the very ingredient as to how
I need to just listen to some more opera. But anyways, I'm very excited about the treatment. I think No Tears, because I'm excited about the idea and moving on and having a more interactive relationship with the viewers and getting their feedback at the same time as we're talking about it. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be really good.
It's going to be different than anything I think that's going on out there when it comes to... Everybody likes to talk about movies and give their opinion. So we're going to give them a venue to do that.
Yeah, we're going to give you a voice, audience. That's right, baby. But we're maintaining our voices as well. We're going to talk lots and...
Yes, we will.
We'll talk over you plenty because our opinions are the most important ones. Am I right?
Truth.
Truth. That's why we have a podcast and you probably don't.
We're going to have to get someone to moderate.
Can't hear you.
We're going to have to get a moderator. I mean, we're going to probably need a moderator to listen to read the comments.
Yeah, we'll have to.
I'd be a great moderator.
That's it. I think.
We'll talk to Hills.
I'd be like, this person could go fuck themselves.
Oh, that's good. That's good. All right, folks. Well, thank you for tuning in for the last couple of years. 300 episodes. Wow, it's been absolutely crazy. The episodes aren't going anywhere, so go back, continue to listen to your favorites, and we look forward to interacting with you more in the future. Stay tuned for our announcement where you can find the treatment, how you can get into it, get it into your eye and ear holes as per usual, and most importantly, what our first couple of movies are going to be, so that you can get those in and be ready to come along for the ride. So that's going to be lots of fun. So, and until then, for kind of the last time, until we see you again and ongoing for the rest of your walking days on this fucking planet, enjoy your shit. Thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. Our handle is holdup_podcast. You can fire us a comment or two, add a movie to our wish list, and we always post a hint about our next episode in the middle of the week. Feel free to drop us an email directly if you've got some feedback for us. Our email is podcast.holdup@gmail.com. Our podcast can be found where most podcasts are these days: Podbean, iTunes, Google Play Music, Spotify, and Player FM.